Welcome back to Not Too Busy to Write. I'm Penny Winsor, author and book coach. Today, I'm speaking with international best-selling author Jessie Sutanto. Jessie is the Indonesian-Chinese writer behind two huge comic crime series, Dial A for Aunties and Vera Wong's Unsolicited Advice for Murderers. Today, we're chatting about the third novel in the Aunties series, The Good, the Bad, and the Aunties. Jessie also talks to me about going from dark, suspenseful writing to leaning more into her comic side, which led to huge success, the joys of sharing her Indo-Chinese culture with the world, as well as how she manages to write a draft in just 5 weeks. Yep, you heard me correctly, 5 weeks. The Good, the Bad, and the Aunties is out on March 28th, and it's a total joy. My next nonfiction book proposal workshop is coming up on the 27th of March at 7 p.m. If you have been itching to get going on a nonfiction book proposal and don't know where to begin, you can grab your place at pennywinsorwrites.com/workshops. And don't forget to use the code TOOBUSY to get £5 off. All of the links to that is in the show notes. Enjoy the episode. Hi, Jessie. Thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's just dive straight into your latest book, which is about to come out, The Good, the Bad, and the Aunties. It's the third installment of the Aunties series. And I was reading somewhere that someone else described it as a rom-com crime mashup. I was kind of thinking as I was reading the books that they feel like proper capers. But I'd love to hear, first of all, what genre would you describe them as?
So I kept telling my friends when I was writing the first book, I was like, oh, I'm writing a rom-com. And they would ask me what it's about. And I'd be like, oh, it's, you know, this young woman, she accidentally kills her blind date. And then she has to get the help of her very meddlesome mother and aunts to get rid of the body. And they would be like, oh my God, that sounds excellent. But where is the rom of the rom-com? And I'd be like, oh yeah. And then I'd be like, yeah, well, okay, whatever. I'll throw in a hot guy in there, you know, and it'll happen. So, I don't know why I kept thinking of it as a rom-com. But I feel like the romance is actually like, you know, the B plot of the books. So.
And how did you come to write? Because you've written in multiple genres now. You've written YA, middle grade. You've got you've got two adult series on the go. How did you come to write this style of book? Did it take you a lot of books to get here? Did you 10, 12 years ago when you'd finished your MFA at Oxford, is this where you imagined your writing would go?
Oh my gosh, thank you so much for mentioning the MFA from Oxford, by the way. Because, you know, I like to be like, did I mention that I went to Oxford? But like, if someone else does it for me, then it's like less obnoxious. So thank you.
I'm dying to hear the journey from Oxford MFA in creative writing to these hilarious and really joyful books. So I'd love to hear how that happened.
Oh my God. So after I graduated, I was like, okay, I have an MFA from Oxford and, you know, I am clearly hot shit. And publishers are going to be like knocking on my door, begging me for a book. And, you know, as it turned out, it didn't happen. And I got rejected like hundreds, if not like thousands of times. So it actually took over 10 years after graduating for me to even get like my first book deal. So up until then, I was writing mostly YA and mostly like YA kind of suspense. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I just felt like I was very like deep and dark and very mysterious, you know, and and they weren't working out. And my writing friends kept telling me like, I don't know, I feel like your characters are too flippant about like death or, you know, murder for it to kind of be realistic. And so at some point, I guess it kind of sank in and I was like, yeah, I guess they're right. You know, the characters are too flippant. And I thought, well, maybe instead of trying to fix that, how about like I lean into it, mm-hmm. And have the characters be very flippant. But then I needed like a character to kind of balance that out and be like, why are you so flippant about this? So that was kind of how Dial A for Aunties came about. So yeah, it was a very long, twisty journey to kind of get here.
I love that. I think it's so true sometimes that we can really fight our natural abilities in a way, and that when mm-hmm. we lean into them and embrace them, that our writing can kind of go to another level. But so what was your first book that was published? Which was the first one that was published?
The first one that was published was a YA suspense. It's called The Obsession. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's kind of dark. It's like about this boy who falls in love with a girl and starts stalking her. And it really like, I'm so grateful for the journey that book has had, because it was a very small book deal. I really thought, you know, nothing would happen. And then it went viral on TikTok. And so it became like a best-selling book. And so even now it's still selling well. And I like to kind of pop on to TikTok and just see what people are saying about it. And it really makes me worried about teenagers, because so many of them are like, he's so romantic. And
oh my goodness, that's so interesting.
I want a guy to be as into me as like he is into her.
Wow.
But it makes sense. When I was 15, I would have thought the same thing as well.
Yeah. I mean, I know we do worry a lot about teenagers these days, don't we? Because of the access they have to everything. But mm-hmm. it's what's funny is that, you know, when I was 12, 13, I was reading Stephen King. So it's not we weren't having access to things that were very dark and troubled.
yeah, totally.
And so the aunties, I mean, this book is, the three books are told from the perspective of Mehdi, who's in her 20s. Mm-hmm. She's American-born Indo-Chinese. But mm-hmm. really, the stars of the show are the aunties. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about what it is about characters like this that really appeal to readers. There are quite a few out there in crime. Richard Osman, obviously, with his octogenarians, mm-hmm. very popular. And even Miss Marple, obviously, is a huge favorite. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed them so much. And I was trying to think why, and I was thinking, is it because we often really underestimate middle-aged women, and perhaps particularly middle-aged immigrant women?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. Because I remember being in Oxford and we met this bookseller, and she was so sweet. But she was, you know, kind of like an older Caucasian lady. And she was like, oh, you know, like Asian women, they're so, she was like, they're so polite and so, you know, kind of quiet and more on like the submissive side. Because I guess her son is married to a woman from Thailand. And I was like, really? Like you need to meet my parents. You need to meet my mom and my aunts, because you're in for like a rude shock. And she was so surprised, like, really? And I was like, yeah. But I guess I love that, you know, I can kind of share that part of the culture with so many readers. And I feel like the best part of the journey has been getting messages from readers from all over the world. And apparently Greek aunties are like this, Jewish aunties are like this, Nigerian aunties are like this. Pakistani aunties are like this. Apparently, like, none of them has any chill.
And they're dark horses, these aunties. There's a lot going on beneath the surface. I love that. I love the kind of every now and then something will be revealed about each of their pasts that even Mehdi wasn't maybe perhaps aware of, and you just, there's something about that idea that beneath the surface of these kind of, you know, seemingly, I guess, traditional middle-aged women, there's just so much going on.
Oh my God, I know, right? Like, I think I was in my 20s when I found out that, you know, my mom had like kind of an ex-boyfriend who like rode a motorbike. Like, she doesn't allow me to get on a motorbike. Like, I've never been on a motorbike, but apparently she has this ex. And I was like, wow, that's so amazing.
Do you have a favorite of the four aunties in the series to write?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I would have to say it's Big Aunt. And she's not actually based on like the big aunt in my life. She's actually based on one of the other aunties in my life. I have to like scramble all of their personalities up so I don't get in trouble. But you know, when I told my mom like who Big Aunt is based on, she was like, oh my God, she is so her. And, yeah, so this auntie that I based her on, she has like all of the connections, and you know, whenever we get in trouble, we just know like she is the one to call.
Yeah.
And then she'll be like, okay, let me think, and then she'll think about who to call, and then she will call that person,
and she'll know, and she'll know somebody.
Yeah.
That's so funny. Yeah. Big Aunt is also my favorite, I have to say. She is just such a joy on the page, completely a joy. But also this particular book, is this the third and final book in the series?
Yeah, it is the final.
Oh. The books go from LA to Oxford and then mm-hmm. this book to Jakarta. It feels to me like you really love all of those places and really enjoy all of those places. Was it nice though to write about your home city in this latest one?
It was so fun. And especially to write about the Chinese New Year celebration, because yeah. That's what I grew up celebrating. We didn't really, I mean, some years we would be like, oh, let's celebrate Christmas. That would be fun. And then we'd celebrate Christmas. But you know, like we celebrate Christmas in like a very kind of like commercial way, like we've watched in the movies, right? Whereas like Chinese New Year is the one like we actually grew up celebrating. So I mean, it's just so fun to be able to kind of like dive into that and be like, oh, you know, of course. Something terrible happens with like the giving out of the red packets, because like it's pure chaos. So if you're unmarried, you get red packets, but if you're married, you have to give them out. So after my husband and I got married, we were kind of like trying to figure out like how much to give, you know. And then that first year, I remember we ended up giving too little. And it's like so humiliating if you did that, right? You're like, oh God, you know, now that's like really offensive. And so then the next year, we gave like a lot more. And then we found out that like we gave too much. And so we were like, ah, damn it, you know? And it's always such a, like, it's a very complicated process. And then apparently my parents said like, after you get married, you're supposed to give your parents red packets. And I was like, what? Like, nobody told me that, you know? And then my mom was like, yeah, we're like, Dad and I are so hurt that you didn't, you know, you're so unfilial. And I was like, no, it's that like, you didn't explain this tradition, because I got used to receiving red packets from them. You know, not the other way around. So, you know, there are just like so many complications. It just felt very natural to kind of have that mishap happen
yeah.
in the book. Because I'm like literally, you know, drawing from real life, like minus the mafia.
Minus the mafia. I love that. And then there's also, it is completely ripe for comedy, the whole situation, the enormous family. Mm-hmm. Having not been back to Jakarta for a long time. And so everyone's dying to spend time with them. And then obviously this whole complication of being newly married and all these new traditions, completely ripe for comedy. But so I also So the first book in this series won the Comedy Women in Print Award in 2021. We've had another winner actually on the podcast, Michelle Gallen. I absolutely love this prize. For me, there is nothing better than a funny book. And I feel like it's so completely underrated as a genre. You went on then to be one of the judges on the following year, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I did. That was so surreal because the quality of the work that I read was so good. And I was like, oh my God, how the hell did I win this like last year? And I was like, you know, thank goodness I'm not on like this year.
But it's such a fun award. I'm so pleased that it's out there now because I feel like we completely underestimate funny books and just how powerful they are to convey so much within humor. Do you have any authors that you particularly funny authors that you particularly love reading?
So whenever I get asked like who's your most influential like author, it's actually Sir Terry Pratchett. When I was living in Oxford, I think I kind of got like seasonal affective, you know, the depression, because I came from California. Before that, I was like in Singapore and Indonesia, like, you know, completely beautiful weather. And then I moved to Oxford and I was like, oh my God, what
it's
the hell
is this? It's very gray. It's very gray.
So gray. And I was very depressed. And so I just kind of like a lot of the time I stayed home wrapped up in like shawl. And I would just read Terry Pratchett's books. And I reread them. I think I must have read like Witches Abroad like six times over. You know, and all of the books are so like delightfully funny. And his humor is so natural and so brilliant. I have been like kind of, you know, looking out for more books like that. I feel like Richard Osman, you know, gets really close to that. Like it's just so delightful.
Like exactly. That's reading such a great word to describe it, isn't it? It's delightful.
Yeah, it is. So I would say those two are my favorite, like humorous authors.
With the MFA at Oxford, and your switch to kind of a more comic writing, do you think you're going to continue working in this? Do you think you've found your voice now that you're going to stick with? Because I know you obviously work in a few different genres, but in terms of what you're doing at the moment, do you imagine continuing on this way?
Yeah, for sure. Because it's just, I think like my culture is so ripe for it. So like, for example, you know, because I live in Jakarta, unfortunately, you know, you do get like food poisoning is just like a regular occurrence. So at one point, it got bad enough that, you know, I went to the hospital and they're used to it, right? So they just kind of hook you up to an IV and you kind of just sit there. And so I was kind of lying down, you know, just chilling. And then this random woman that I don't even know, like kind of pop her head in, you know, and she was like, oh, I heard from like the nurses that you have food poisoning. And I was like, yeah. And she was like, oh, like, what did you eat? And I was like, I don't know. I think it was this new restaurant I was trying. And she was like, ah, yeah, you know, like, do you have children? And I was like, yeah, I have two. And she was like asking me all these invasive questions, like, how old are they? And she was like, well, you need to take better care of your health. You know, you're a mom. And I was like, and I found myself like apologizing to this random lady. Like, I was like, oh, yes, you're right, Auntie. I'm so sorry. And then like at some point the nurse came to check on me and she was like, she saw the lady there and she was like, oh, your husband is ready to go, by the way. And she was like, oh, okay, yeah, I'll be right there. Like the nurse didn't ask her, like, what are you doing? Like, do you know this patient? You know, there's like, it's so hilarious because I just can't imagine it happening in the UK or the US. Like in the US they'd be like, ma'am, what are you doing? Like, this is so like, you're breaking I don't know how many like privacy laws, you know. And I just feel like I have a duty to share this with the world.
Oh, I love it. I love it. As we're speaking today, you have just finished a 5-week, writing a draft in 5 weeks. I've been following along on Instagram. It has been such a joy to follow along with you. I wanted to ask you a few questions about it. First of all, there'll be listeners listening to this thinking 5 weeks, a whole draft. Can you give us a little rundown on how you make that happen?
Yeah. Okay. So first of all, it took me like 10 years to come up, you know, with this speed, because my first book took 3 years to write. Cause I was just figuring it out, you know, like at one point I remember like, oh my God, I don't know why I didn't think of this sooner, but what I'm going to do actually is, instead of like writing a whole book at once, I'm going to break it down into sections and write just like a section at a time. And I remember my husband looking at me and being like, you mean like chapters? And I was like, oh, okay. Yes, I just invented chapters. Thank you. but, you know, so I was so clueless. So it took a long time for me to get to like this 5-week schedule. So kind of like I spent 3 days plotting the book, because I found that if I want to write fast, it really works better if I have an outline, because otherwise, like, you know, I'm just kind of groping around in the dark, and it's just an extra layer of difficulty. And so then by Wednesday, I should be done with the plotting, and then I have like 2 days of writing, like Thursday, Friday, and then I take weekends off. So it's like the perfect first week, because then I'm not like overwhelmed by, oh my gosh, this is the week I just start writing, you know? And then after that, I have like, basically 4 weeks, where I write 2000 words every weekday. Mm-hmm. And at the end of it, I should have around 40,000 words. And then I go to a beautiful hotel for like 3 nights. I leave my family behind and I tell everyone like, do not call me unless there's like a lot of blood. Cause you know, when I first started going, my husband would send me photos like, look at the kids. They're so cute. You know? And I'm like, yeah, they're cute, but I'm writing going.
So. They'll be cute in 3 days time as well. I'll wait for that.
Yeah. So, and then during these three magical days, I do nothing but, you know, write and eat a lot and sleep. Like, people ask me like, oh my God, are you writing like for 24 hours? Like, no, I would die if I did that. Like, I'm getting 7 hours of sleep a night. You know, I'm taking breaks like to stretch and whatnot. So, but each day I aim for like at least 10,000 words. And then hopefully by the end of this trip, I would have finished the book. And that's kind of like how I've written the last 5 or 6 books, and it's worked really well.
5 or 6 now. Okay, that's great. So this is something that you've really now, you've really got it down. You've worked out what works for you. I love that. So cool. And then presumably then the timing of the retreat is where you've just hit that sweet spot where you're like on a roll. Yeah. You can see the finish. You can see where you're going. Yeah. You can see the finish line. So what I would love to know is that with your outlining, how much, when you sit down for those 3 days to do your outline, how much thought has gone into the characters and the kind of direction you want to go with this particular book when you start outlining?
So first I start out with kind of like a 300 word pitch. And, from that pitch, I try to write like a synopsis, and the synopsis would be around like 7 pages long. And then from there, I break it, like I expand that into like a chapter by chapter outline. Mm. And, so it's quite like, you know, detailed. And and people would ask me like, oh, what happens if like your characters decide to go in a different direction? Well, they don't, because
because you're in charge.
They do not dare. Yeah. Oh my God. You know, it's so funny because they used to, like, my characters used to just like kind of wander and kind of sprawl, you know. And then I had children and I completely turned into my mom, you know, like stereotypical like Chinese mother who's like, no, like you do things my way. And I feel like it's kind of transferred onto my characters. So.
Oh, that's so interesting. So you are an author in charge.
Yeah. And what's funny is like the final chapter is the one that I don't plan. And it's the one that kind of takes me the longest to write every time. But I kind of feel like, oh, you know, I'll know what is the perfect way to end the book by the time I get to the final chapter. Yeah. And it's kind of like, okay, you know, characters, you finally have like the freedom to do what you want. So it's kind of like a compromise.
Yeah. I love that. And then as your, once your outline is done and you start to write, because I think this is so key, isn't it? Because if you've got an outline, it's never like you're not going to be sitting down in front of your laptop not knowing what to do that day, are you? You're going to always have a plan. And I love that idea. As a nonfiction writer, this is how I want to approach fiction as well, because I can't imagine sitting down to write without having a blueprint, essentially, because that's how I write nonfiction, because it's sold on proposal. But but so do you, if there are small changes that happen with the scenes, do you then adjust your outline as you go as well? Or do you just then kind of not really change it after that?
No, I do adjust it because, I mean, small changes will definitely happen. Or, you know, you add more detail. That's more likely to happen because no matter how detailed the outline is, it's still an outline. You're kind of filling in the scene as you write. So then I will update the outline. And if there's like a change, then I would kind of make a note on the outline, but I wouldn't go back and change it. In the manuscript, I kind of just keep going as though I have made the change, and then I'll just go back and edit it later.
Yeah. So you keep moving when you're doing a draft, you just keep moving forward until you're done.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. And so finding this technique, which sounds absolutely brilliant, by the way. It was so fun watching you do it. And also I have to say, it does not look super stressful. Like it looks like you've kind of, you know, you're working hard, but you're not kind of, you know, you're not like kind of staying up all night or anything like that. You're working within your children's school hours, right? Also making yourself some really, really gorgeous breakfasts. I have to say, I really enjoyed that aspect of the videos, watching all of your breakfasts. But so using this method, you're writing two books a year now, right? Is that right?
No, I'm writing three books a year.
Oh, wow.
I had four books come out last year and the year before. And this year I'll have two books come out. Next year, I think I will have three. So four books is a little bit too many. I think my happy like rate is three books a year.
Wow. And to make that work, is this, do you like each of those books? Do you like to switch to a different series in a different genre? Because you're writing YA and you're writing adult. And do you sort of toggle between them? And does that help in terms of like feeling coming to each book fresh after just having very recently finished another one?
So when I'm drafting, I only work on that one book at a time. And then when I'm done, you know, I'll do whatever needs to be done according to the publishing schedule. I only ever write one book at a time. And I love switching to like a wildly different genre after that. Cause you know, I'll be like after I wrote, I'm Not Done With You Yet, which is my adult suspense. It was really dark. And I was like, I remember thinking, wow, that was really dark and gloomy and kind of depressing. And then I was like, yeah, I'm ready for like really lighthearted, fun rom-com now. And then after I wrote the rom-com, I remember thinking, okay, now I'm ready for a little bit like of murder stuff, you know? So it's like really refreshing being able to kind of switch like that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I can totally imagine in a way. And so that in terms of when your first draft is done and then will you at this stage, knowing that you've just finished a first draft, will you do your own edit first before you send it off to your agent and your publisher next?
Yeah, definitely. Because, you know, like I mentioned how if there are changes that I've made, you know, I would have kind of just like gone on as though that change has been made.
So right. Yeah.
I really need to like kind of smooth that out. You know, oh no, what if I accidentally forget like a side character? Because my side characters, sometimes they just disappear because I forgot about them. you know, just things like that. But usually it's like nothing super major because of like the meticulous outline.
Oh, that's so good. And so do you have an agent and publisher who are pretty quick on the ball in terms of reading and returning notes to you? Because it sounds like they probably have to be fairly fast to keep up with you.
So I'm so lucky because my agent is so patient and so understanding, you know, so she takes about 2 weeks in general to like read and get back to me, which I think is really fast.
Yeah.
And then my publishers, I wouldn't say that they're like super fast, but they do have like a schedule.
Yeah.
So, and I work with multiple publishers, so I don't need them to be fast, you know.
Yes, that's true.
They're kind of like on a normal schedule. So yeah, I feel like I'm at a really good place with people who are very, very like ready to compromise.
Yeah. Oh, well, it's been such a joy to talk with you today. Thank you so much. It's really interesting to talk to every writer about the different ways that they approach their writing. I don't think I've ever spoken to anyone who writes quite this fast before. And it's just so enjoyable to see how it works. I know obviously it's not necessarily right for everybody or how everybody works, but it's been such a joy to follow along with you on Instagram. I would definitely recommend all the listeners go and follow Jessie on Instagram to watch those reels about writing every single day for five days a week for 5 weeks to get a draft done. It was really inspiring. And I think sometimes with writing, we almost make it feel like wizardry or something. And the way you break it down, it's like, oh, this is just, you know, you've broken it down like work. And you do it very joyfully every day. And it was just so enjoyable to watch.
Oh, thank you so much. It means so much to me to hear you say that, because like the videos are so time consuming.
Yes, I know. I was thinking about that, thinking you're committing to doing the videos every day after you've,
I know,
you know, every day. It's a big commitment.
Yeah. And I'll be like, oh my God, it's, you know, like I've just put the kids to bed. Damn it, I still need to make the video. But is it really, really nice being able to share the process?
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it so much. I'm sure there's loads of other writers out there who have appreciated you sharing the process so much. The Good, the Bad and the Aunties is out very, very soon. What's the in the UK? It's March 20.
I don't know. I gave up trying to remember my publication dates.
But it is brilliant. It's so fun. And thank you so much for chatting with me today.
Thank you so much for having me.